794, Sorge, June 22, 2008, Lecture 4.1, Software Education and Training. Okay, to start with, what have you do something? Page 103. So just put some thoughts in there, and then we will discuss them. It'll take about 7 minutes or so to think about that. So again, it's not MS Access you're putting that here for. It's training software. Page 103.
So it's
training software to train people in using MS Access or to using CorelDRAW. This is a big market. There's lots of stuff like that around. So just picture you need to learn a program and you have this software. What do you want to do? How do you evaluate it?
Thank you.
Since the University of Maryland has a subscription to the Trust and Review, which is going up to McKelvey, and I'm logged on through the university system, when I went to click on it and at home it said, for $35 you can have this, it just gave it to me. Now, I would have gone to McKelvey and gotten it, but there's two other reviews that I don't really need because they're on other systems. But I was interested just because the Trust and Review had
it's a lot of reviews.
Trusty Advisors. And it's got ratings and scores. And you can get at it from here, but not from out there. And it was, I just got one on another. This is another bibliographic handle, which just having looked at the one that I get.
Okay. This will come up momentarily. So, again, we're looking at on page 103. We're looking at criteria for evaluating training software that trains in using complex programs. So what criteria did you come up with? I'll start typing, you will come up here as soon as this thing warms up.
Well, the first thing I wrote down was some kind of video tutorials that are interactive. I was thinking of things like Captivate or Camtasia. I think it's Captivate that you can, have them click on things as you go through and do it, but then they also, I think that's the one that has an option of a little quiz at the end to see what you've learned and, that sort of thing, but something that
Yeah. And we probably need to turn one of the other lights off.
Why is it so small?
Sorry. You are.
I had three things. The training package itself has to be easy to use, self-explanatory. And it has to be current with the current version of Access or CurlDraw. And that maybe it should have some evaluative features so that you can know how people have done in terms of what they've
done. Oh, make an assessment.
Yeah.
Let me just do something here. Is this enough? Huh? I don't know why it's it was bigger last yesterday, wasn't it? I don't know why it does that. Let me. I'll take it off from there and I'll try it again. No. Nope. Can you read it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I think I missed one of them that you said. So it should be.
Guided exercises.
What exercises?
Guided exercises.
Okay.
And I've said that it should be very easy to use, sort of self-explanatory in and of itself, the training program itself. You don't have to train for the training program. Yeah.
Okay.
I said what base?
That's sort of a different kind of feature. Because, I mean, however it's delivered.
I keep track of courses completed and pending courses.
Like if you go through like the modules or whatever, that's a good one.
And that I was thinking of that along with the testing, it's just records, success, failure, progress, completion.
I have a search option for users to find help on a given subject or topic.
I have help written down with that information. Because I was like, that's going to be really important to find
training. Context. Specific help. Really, yeah. Really good context.
I know what this is. There's no code in there to explain, so I don't know what's happening here. I was going to put the test with the. So this would all be sort of under a more general. Area of record keeping. What else should it keep?
I mean, perhaps I keep track of your performance of tests that you took so that you can evaluate. The only other thing that I have that isn't on the list, not really just the record keeping, but having specific tutorials for, or like specific tutorials or examples of the different tasks that software can complete. So you have like maybe a broader tutorial, but then you can go for like specific, that could go along with the.
Okay, how would we define specific tasks? Say for the graphics program. Because you mentioned another key, specific audience. To sort of abstract that from your. So can you specify? Either the whole thing is only for one audience, or you could. So we should read it adaptable to. And.
Maybe for like access, you could give different like examples of different types or templates, guides, and different types of databases you could create.
Okay.
For the specific audiences.
Well, the audience is a sort of a separate orthogonal piece. So different types of databases. What about draw?
It's just like a...
You can do all kinds of drawings and graphics.
Like a pen tool or using specific tools.
That, when you would assume that somebody said at some point that you should be able to... I'm going to see whether I can delete this without... Okay. That you should be able to find specific things. So in that case, you presumably would have illustrations, so it would be have units for different features of the software, which is different from the task, because this deals with different features or functions. Whereas a task deals, so that's software centric. Whereas a task is user centric. So you may need to do different kind of pictures. Somebody may want to use this for doing architectural drawings. Somebody may want to use it for sort of more like doodle-like drawings that they would put on a website. It's supposed to look sort of informal and so
there would be different sections. Like one would be learn how to use the pen tool, and another section would have like learn how to make a logo or something like that.
Now I think I was talking while I was citing different types of images. Okay, let me format it a little better. And that then all I may want to learn is how do I make architectural drawings. And then I would say, this is the kind of image I want to make. And it would take me through the tutorial, through the program, and it would teach me the features. I need to do that. Precise measurements, for example, would be important. And I may not need that feature if I just do some logos or if I want to do some sort of informal, funny-looking figures for a website of a party store.
I guess to go along with the whole testing idea, perhaps like if there was a dynamic aspect of it, so if you're tracking the performance of a user, then you can modify, like the software would have the ability to modify the types of questions asked to.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's definitely the presentation, if you will, or the presentation is very generic. What does the software, how does the software interact with the user to measure performance? And it would have done this from the test. They do that for typing. Programs that keep typing.
Mm-hmm.
If you make, you will get your mistakes, and then it will give you exercises to train your finger on the I or whatever letter you often make a mistake on, or so on.
And depending on how good the software is, it just repeated 800 times and make frustrating. There should be a middle school attention span setting for some of these. I guess that would be something to think about, you know, with the audience stuff. You know, it's for middle school, elementary, middle school, high school, you know, an adult that really wants to learn something will probably be willing to sit down and spend a chunk of time on it.
Right.
Whereas a middle school student, 10 to 15 minutes typing practice is it.
I'll just maybe a better way to raises how big or vary the kinds of effort. That's I think. And it may actually, this is maybe not even for the audience. This may be individuals. So, I mean, I could say I want to do half-hour lessons every day. Somebody else could say, I want to go through this in a day and be done. And that could, it would take some sophistication to adapt to that one.
Yeah.
Because if you do it in half hour chunks, it sort of needs to get you back in to be aware, so it needs to have some review.
Okay.
Okay.
Defining all those different things.
So we still need to put this in
gosh,
message access always tempts me error messages
that I'm that's what they're talking about.
okay, now this is how could this tutorial prepare you to understand the error messages of access?
This is like a common problem with software there in general, isn't it? There'd be error messages, but there's no explanation beyond the messages that you don't understand.
Yeah.
If there was, I don't quite understand that, but as part of the hope anywhere there was somewhere you could go to understand or interpret the error messages that you never know what they mean.
And that could be part of access, but be one thing. But how could the tutorial help you?
The tutorial could run you through scenarios that require you to make an error and then explain it.
It should. Where do I put the app? Wait a minute. This is. They are not really, you still have, I try to do a little ordering here, but you have to do some more. But so you would want to get the experience of common errors. So demonstrate common errors some way or another. It could just play a sequence. Here's the screen, if you do this, this error, because this is the error message. Or it could have you actually make the error. Either way.
It would, this is kind of off topic, but I would hope that in that case, if it was, they would tell you up front that you are going to make this error, because I don't know if, if I'm sitting there watching this training program and I went through every step, to then come to an error message I wasn't, expecting during the training exercise.
I think that would be frustrating to a user. Just something I'm getting. No. So adjust the paragraph spacing. If it's one thing that goes with several lines, it's more easily. Many people in PowerPoint use line spacing for this purpose. But it's not what you want to do. Because you want the lines within one paragraph together, but between paragraphs you want the space. So just an aside.
Automatic setting, new word, you have to go in and tell it not to if you don't.
So, in any kind of training, taking people through common errors is an important thing to do. Because when you show them how it all works and how it's supposed to work, and then they go out and do it, and the first time they come to an error, they're stumped. Particularly if the error method is not good. And so then I put the error. Okay, explain the error message and reasons for the error. Because they are... and then, of course, once you know the reason, you can fix it. Because often error messages leave people clueless as to what the reason for the error is. So that will be tricky. Like anything else you might want to look for in such a piece of software? What about how it communicates with the user? So you assume it has screenshots. How else can you communicate with the user?
Voice over audio.
And one person in the room if you're doing audio.
Or headphones. Headphones, I mean, yeah.
At the same time, you'd want to test as well, I would think,
for
like the hearing impaired, maybe, like also text on the screen, caption
thingy.
What is the option of that?
So that could be adaptable to the audience, but I mean, you could have, and you, I mean, if you have screenshots, you may want to have little post-its or whatever you. I mean, you have all seen the screenshots where it has sort of bubbles that point to an area. This is this. You want that kind of presentation. We could have a lot of generic user interface criteria here. That was not the problem of this exercise. This exercise was to look at the specific pieces. And actually, the communication with user is sort of also generic, but in many programs, audio would not be important, but here, it may be very useful. Do this, do that, do that, do that.
Not just still screenshots, but the video actual step-by-step.
Yes, so it could be, and I think we already said somewhere interactive, so it could actually take you through the program. So all of these are criteria if you use this program as standalone. Now, if you have such a nice tutorial, what might be another use of it? Instead of just using it for the standalone piece. So you have a unit of different features and functions. You are actually working on doing a drawing and you don't know how to do X.
You could do the drawing in the learning.
Well, or either that, or you could access the learning tool from inside the program. So, I mean, if it could be configured to be another form of help, that would be useful. Things. That would be a criterion you'd want to apply. Now, that's the kind of criterion you have to, it's sort of, you have to think in terms of a design almost. Say, how could I make this most useful? And you may not see this feature. No reviewer may have thought of it. But it's sort of obvious. If you have something that teaches you how to use certain features of a program to be able to access this tutorial, this training program from within the application would be very useful. That may go on the bottom of the criteria. So, okay. There will be sure to be a lot more, but there's a lot you can come up with, which just brainstorming. It's probably a good idea to do that first, because like access from within the application, you might not have thought of if you just jump right in. There are things you might think of that once your mind is sort of fresh and not already taken over by what the software does or by what other people say, often then you latch onto this and it precludes your own thinking. Like if I do in 670, I have people do a Trump paper, they indicate stuff, and I don't want to give them sample topics because that might close off their mind to the student's mind to other things they may think of. So here, you start doing this with a completely open mind and not sort of led in the one direction or another by what exists. There may be other things we can think about if we have thought about it longer.
If you were really going to do this, the method would be to go talk to the people who... I mean, you'd go look at the software, at CorelDRAW and Access, and then you'd go talk to the people who want to teach it or use it, and you'd make this list based on task analysis or the user requirements. Right.
Right. I think I would make version zero of the list just by... It's assumed you know something about this application. I mean, you cannot do it without knowing anything.
But you don't want it to be... a self-absorbed occupation. It ought to be grounded in what you're evaluating and who's going to use it.
Absolutely. I would just, I would go and do this brainstorm exercise first.
Yeah, absolutely.
To just come up with any odd thoughts that I may not come up with once I talk to people. Because once I talk to people, I'm led down a path. So, but you're entirely right, the next step would be now to look at the programs and see what are all the functions. Maybe to read something about what people have difficulties with. To talk to users themselves, to see what they have difficulties with, and all these things that they talk about would come into play. All right. So I just save this, and I think that's all I wanted to do with that. So let's turn our back the lights back on.
So were we supposed to perform something like this for the midterm?
For the midterm second question.
Okay.
And some of you did. I'll get you the midterm stack today with an answer sheet. But
I saw the answers. Would you? I mean, if we do something like this in class, can you send that on to?
I'll send it on to you.
Yeah.
I take
nice
it. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of doing it this way. I mean, this is still a better way to do it.
You can't keep filling it in.
No. I will send you the other one we did yesterday.
Okay,
and I mean, the other device that you can use for that, which is in some ways maybe a little better, is the whiteboard you write on.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you are in a group, if you facilitate a group like this, sitting at a computer and typing it in maybe not quite as animated as the group is to stand at the board and you're guided. Something that maybe psychological, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
That's why the smart boards are so popular.
Yeah, but would it be more enticing for people to participate if the facilitator stands at the smart board and writes it? Or if the facilitator sits at the computer and types it and shows them the screen? Does it make a difference? I don't know. Question. Anyway, that's why they use smart boards. So let me go through with you this outline of criteria for evaluating educational software in general, education and training software. So this environment of use is one characteristic one would look at. Is it intended for class one or could it be adapted to several on one of these, and the environment of school, any less. Case with PhD. Or the home. And you have different requirements at the home. In the school, the student may have a teacher that can help in one way or another. In the home, you're on your own. Any kind of organization. And this is big business. Training is big business. I mean, we just looked at training for software, but there's all kinds of machinery. And machinery gets more and more complex. They have these machines that make parts, metal parts, and so they stamp them out of a metal sheet and they file them and whatever. And it's all on the computer control. And you may need somebody from the manufacturer to come and program your machine. Actually, usually you do. But if you want to make some variation of the part, you don't want to have a manufacturer first that should come every time. So you need to have somebody in that manufacturing company trained to program the machine. So you may need training software to train somebody. So training software is a big, is big. There are different types of educational applications where one needs to keep in mind that some programs combine. So the first here, and actually one of you does the project on this, programming languages for use by students. Or tools that let students program. There is the drawing programs. I mean, there. Some of these doing programs is sort of where the student actually creates, in this case, a game graphically. So instead of typing down commands, you execute on the screen the action you would have a command do. It's one way. But you still learn the program because you may be able to make this part of the game and give that piece a name, and so you might be able to construct different modules which then put together or get a game. So you may have not typed any instruction, but you have learned the idea of modular design. There's a programming language called Logo, which actually they don't well, no, it's really right programs. But they are in program, there's immediate execution. So the metaphor in Logo is you move a turtle across the screen to make drawings. It can do other things but graphics is sort of its main. And so you say go forward 10 and go left 7 and then the 10 up and 10 down command, so you can move the turtle with drawing, without drawing. You can draw shapes, and you can learn. You can draw a square by say go forward 50, turn right, repeat 4 times. So it's programming as a model for problem solving. Okay, that's one way of programming. there is an offer application for programming which I think is quite useful, and that is having students write programs in a certain topic. So I think that is this with maybe 5 year old, 6 year olds. We use the list processing capabilities of Logo, and so this was constructing sentences consisting just of three roots. And so you could tell the program pick a word from this list, from this list, from this list, make a root. And so you can say, Mary, Joe, Bill, it doesn't do much. It's not a sentence. But they will eventually learn that he's always picked from this list. Mary hits the ball. The ball comes from one list, hits comes from another. Mary buys a book. So they will eventually learn that to make a sentence, simple sentence, the middle verb has to come from one of the three lists of things they have. But with that, they may still be able to do Mary eats Bill. Eventually figure out that doesn't make sense. So that will, by just look, first of all, they have fun looking at nonsense sentences. So sometimes they will just make a nonsense sentence on purpose, which of course you can also do. But they will eventually learn parts of speech. Because they see what word in this position makes a good sentence and what does not. So eventually the difference between people and things. And what verbs take a person as an object, the way you make it sensible, with what verbs can you make a sensible sentence. If you have a word like eats or drinks or kicks, what needs to go in the third place? And there are verbs that may take either a person or an object, or something as an object, and some that take only persons, and some that take only things. They can learn how grammar functions by trying to generate language. So they write a program to generate language. And by doing that, they learn the rules of language. The second one is similar. If they learn Latin conjugation rules are very excellent, and you can do rote learning of them, or you can have students write a program that, given a verb and a tense and a person, will produce the proper form. And I think students will learn more than that way.
We have a Latin teacher that did it as a web cartoon, had a student that drew the cartoon and wrote the words in Latin, and another kid who read them in Latin, and another kid that translated them into English. And when you scrolled over, it said the kid's voice read it out loud in Latin.
Oh, okay.
And then if you clicked on it, it would change it to the English that another student had written it in.
Okay.
So they all got involved in that, and they all did groups of three, did their own little cartoons.
Yeah. Now, in terms of evaluation of the two, or the comparison of the two approaches, writing a program with Latin conjugation uses software to get into the language, if you will. What the teacher did was sort of external to the language and just got interest. It made dealing with the language more interesting. It didn't really get into the core of the language. Both approaches have their merit, I think, but they are different ways of making things interesting. So this is, programming is one way of doing instruction. Computer supported instruction is another. So this is software where the user's work is supported by the software. This could be very general. just think software that helps thinking in general. Have all of you at one time drawn bubble charts to do to create an essay? I don't think they have an example in there. So you write some idea down, and then you say, okay, there's another. Say you want to, you have to write an essay about campaign financing, and then one idea is clearly how do money contribution influence politics, and then one is public financing, and one is how do you get supporters. There are multiple ideas you might want to consider. Each gets a little circle, and you make some logical connections. The contributions from big companies might influence a candidate to do something. It's also called content mapping. I think all of you have done either one or the other. So software that helps people, students, make some graphical representation of concepts and connections. I think there's one called inspiration, and it's there's basically there's much of the software marketed just to support brainstorming. And much of it's not very good, but that's one piece you can do. And creativity support software is closely allied to that, because one way to support creativity is to have people thought this out, but another may be to ask people some questions. What's your story about? Who is the hero? What is this? What is that? So in story writing, you could ask a number of questions that might people get over a writer's block. Games and puzzles, if done well, can help practicing thinking skills. In mathematics, software to graph functions. If you want to explore, say, you do polynomials, y equals 3x squared plus 5. Y equals the x to the third minus 2x squared, etc. And then you get to higher order polynomials, and you want students to explore the difference between a cubic and a quadratic polynomial, or a difference between its coefficients, the positive and negative, and so forth, how they look. You can do this sort of empirically, and you could have people do, as you probably all learned in school at one point, to make a chart that says for this value of x, y is that, and then you draw it out. And but by the time you have drawn the graphs for three functions, you're tired. And you want to explore the behavior of 20, which is really interesting part. You never get there. Whereas if you have software to graph functions, and even some calculators do this. So you just type in the equation for the function and it draws it. And you can type in 50 and you can compare how they what the effect is, and you get a good feel for what the effect is. The others in poly computation, how many of you did calculus? So to get the integral of a function, which is computing the area under the function, that can get quite tricky. And there are programs that can help with it.
Yes, make it worse too. Of course, they've probably improved in the past 10 years or so. But
in science, there are lots of things you can do. Scientific calculations, collect the data. Even 20 years ago for the Apple, they had a kit where you could actually do the temperature. And so you could do an experiment where you heat a body of water with a given flame, and it would graph for you the temperature as a function of the time.
That's a neat kit that I found that was like something to do with whales and underground audio or underwater audio stuff, the little microphone, some of that stuff, but it's for computers with 5.5-inch floppies.
Okay.
And yeah, the plugs on it and on the microphones don't exist on any computer.
Yeah, so they all, but they have new, they have
neat stuff.
Yeah, I mean, before you go to that, you could have software that just lets you record your own data easily and cast them and so on. But computerized instrumentation just makes the science a lot easier and lets students do a lot more science. And it's also real life. I mean, in real science, there's few people still sit down and actually record measurements from instruments. It's all recorded automatically. And it's huge. Actually, I mean, there's this idea that you could run the experiment in chemistry and collect the chemical data and then analyze the data and then have a text generation software to write your paper. So the whole process of creating the paper could be automated. Not entirely, but a good piece of it can be. And some of this could happen in science simulation, scientific processes. I have mentioned that the program where you can simulate the two body problem. So you have the two body problem is you have like the Earth circling around the sun, and you have to do the physics to compute the trajectory of the Earth around the sun. And what happens if the gravitational force varies not with the distance of, with the square of the distance, but with the cube of the distance. What's the shape of the orbit? And then you could explore, and there's a program that lets you do that. And you can only have two, you can have three bodies, which is a really, which is a much more complex problem mathematically, but students can explore sort of different worlds, what happens. A simulation of scientific processes. In social studies, there's a lot of things you can do. Analyze data, consolidate data. Create your own database and you take a survey of something, etc. And of course, there's simulation of social processes. And there is SimCity. Which does exactly that. So that sort of falls under games, but it's in this case it's actually exploring social systems. And in economics, on business, they do this. They all have a team of five people and each own the company, and they have a simulation where the people make decisions. And then they will see how well the company works. And of course it depends on what other people on the team do with their companies. And so you can simulate real life.
Civilization.
Yeah.
Civilization.
Yeah, that's a similar simulation.
You have to decide whether to build a library or build ships. You know, you've got limited resources. You can build this really enlightened civilization
that
doesn't come and destroy you
because you. Right. So language arts, that's really real processing that helps people to things. There is, and there is a reading that you have about the writing in the 21st century. So word processing can help with a lot of the mechanics of writing and free students up to do the creative piece of writing. Now, there will be always be people who will decry the decline of handwriting. And I think as you can see from my writing is not good. My son is worse. And so he, starting with 60, started writing on the computer. So there was always a fight with the schools who wanted a handwritten essay.
Nope, I want them typed.
Yes.
They still do.
Some of them still do, yes.
In the IB program, they make them write everything
Okay, not everything, but yeah, because when they test in the testing for SATs and IB, it has to be written because I guess they just won't let any computers into them, and so they make them learn how to do it that way so that they can test them that way.
Dictionary report, spell check.
Yeah, spell check.
Oh, so in all, I mean, the some people are very autistic, but they don't have the manual facility to do it. So with software, they can produce all the music. So there is a that I think is the most interesting piece of educational software is to support people in what they're doing. It's also probably the smallest part of the pie, if you will. Networking, so people in Thailand can talk to people here about culture and whatnot, so there's collaboration. It's another part of support people what they're doing, but now collaboratively. Becoming more and more important, because in real life there's a lot of collaboration. And I understand that now finally at least doing something about collaborative software, the students can collaborate. And to have the MIM program without that kind of background and getting people really involved in enterprise systems is just... Okay. There's computer assisted instruction. It's been around for a long time. It's sort of the computer implementation, what we call programmed instruction. And the idea is like make your own adventure game or go through your own adventure game where, and they have even books where you say the hero goes through this door, go to page 7, the hero goes through that door, go to page 12. The programmed instruction was just you read something, you get make a test, and if you, depending on your test, you read the next thing. Clearly, that's more easily done by computers. So that's so. In the first part, there's computer-assisted instruction software to support the student's own work. Computer-supported instruction. The user is doing the work. The student. It's just the software makes it easier, more interesting because it takes out the drudgery and frees up for the creativity. Computer assisted instruction is transmit content. Now, you need to do that. Not everybody can discover everything for themselves. I mean, otherwise, civilization would have developed. We would always start from ground zero. So there has to be some transmission of content. There's no question. And so a computer assisted instruction can be useful for that purpose, and you can individualize it. And a lot of transmission of content is done by lecturing. That means everyone at the same pace. In computer assisted instruction, it may not be as effective for everybody. Today, with the technology, it may be you can have as much voice as... I mean, you can have multimedia presentation, which may be more effective than just having people read. Can be more interactive. So today, the computer-assisted instruction can be more like a teacher. But it can't, but there's still an interpersonal interaction with the teacher that you can't get with the instruction. You probably need a lot of stuff. Educational games, they can be used to teach all kinds of things, where within the game you need to use certain skills. So if within the game you need to do addition to be successful, the addition has a function. And makes sense. Now, the worst of educational programs is probably the one that used most is drill and practice. Again, there is some role for drill and practice, but it should be much, I mean, it's much smaller than it's often used in. Program is, of course, it's a good, probably computer program is better than flash codes. For typing, definitely, I mean, it's a computer program is probably better than a typing teacher, because it can be really individualized. Administering tests, student assessment, actually you came up with that in the training software for them. And then finally, managing instruction. See, part of what an instructor needs to do is to report in grades and stuff like that, and that can be done automatically. But more importantly, that's just part of managing instruction. When you have individualized instruction, you need to adapt what's being presented to where the student is. And how do you know if you don't keep track very carefully of test results and the student understands this concept, we just need to understand this other concept. So it's not just keeping track of what the student does, it's planning. So you plan, you have an initial state of knowledge, the user, the student knows X in math, they need to know statistics. There's a pathway of prerequisites. That, I mean, there's a, and so, and there are units, modules that teach these concepts. And some modules are for fast learners and some are for slow learners. And so based on the profile of the student, a good system that manages instruction can devise a sequence of, to use a jargon, educational experiences for the student. So some of this will be presenting material, some of this will be exploration, some of this will be testing, material and practice to reinforce something, practice problems, some of it will be testing. And then after the first round, the student profile is updated, the plan is updated according to the student. So that way you can really individualize instruction. Without computers and 1,500 students in the school, you can't. Well, the best you can do is have advanced math and average math and math for people who are not quite as good in math. So the best you can do in individualization is to put them into one of these groups. But with computer managed instruction, you can adapt the program to each individual student. So all of this was just context, sort of, but you need to have that context to, if you want to evaluate some piece of educational software, you need to first of all place it according to the environment of use and the type of application. Then you can evaluate. And what I gave on page 106 to 107 are special criteria for selecting educational software. And as always, you would still need to use all the general software criteria, some of them being more important than others. So we can just run through this criteria, education objective supported. You would want to know what is supported. And for those of you who are in the educational media program, or 670, there is a classification of educational objectives. Bloom's taxonomy. That's sort of generic. I mean, is this about learning vocabulary? Very basic. Or is this about understanding the spirit of physics? Very top level objective. What does this support? Does it support rote learning or thinking skills? But then also specific objectives. Doing fractions in math. That's what it does. How does it fit into the curriculum? It's important that hearing within a context. If this is a drill and practice-based school, this sort of constructivist approach, thinking skill, game, won't be fitting. And conversely, if this is a school that emphasizes thinking skills over rote learning, then drill and practice may not be as fitting. Do they teach concepts in such a way that they can easily be transferred to other areas? So there are several difficulty levels. Is a difficulty level adjusted as the student progresses? That's their educational software can learn from games. Because many games have different difficulty levels. And you sort of progress from one to the next. Some of these are sort of taken from the generic, but so important for education that they're taking feedback. If you learn, you do not learn without feedback. So feedback is key. And the criticism must be constructive. So you never want to put the student down. You just want to be encouraging and see, okay, this was good, but this was not. And this slightly different problem would have been solved by what you did, but this problem was not. What's the difference? So, and that's hard. See, a good teacher can do that. For a broken, it's horrible. Involves the students. The tests we talked about, keep records we talked about. Now, educational software sometimes is content free in the sense that if it does chemical computations, it doesn't teach chemical content. But the computation has to be correct. Now, if it does teach chemistry content, of course, you have to make sure that it teaches correct chemistry. If it does teach history, you want to be sure it's not biased. It's probably taking stereotypes. Actually, the three stereotypes of all kinds apply to all kinds of software or television programs. I don't know whether that program still exists. My son used to watch this program on Discovery Channel where there were three kids doing science experiments. So all these three kids could have been white boys. And so it's not about personality building or sociology or whatever. It's just about science. But it nevertheless communicates the message. I think that problem it wasn't. I think there was a white boy and they had it mixed by gender and by ethnicity. In a program that teaches science, you may well have sort of a simulation of a lab, and you may have people do things, so it may be like, they have all these other programs where you move characters around. You could have a program teaching science by having people on the screen do things in science experiments. Then you should have a mix of gender and ethnicity. So I skipped over presentation. Use all the capabilities. And we touched on that in the training software. We said it's good to have voice as well as animation, as well as writing. So multimedia, make it interactive. Motivation. There could be two types to motivate. So when I said there's a game where you need to do correct addition to move your piece forward, that intrinsic motivation. Well, I mean, it's planning to, I mean, doing well in the game is sort of the purpose of the student there. So whatever serves that purpose is intrinsic motivation. Whatever serves the student level's purpose is intrinsic motivation. Whereas a drill and practice game that plays a happy sound if you get it right and makes some nasty sound if you get it wrong, that would be extrinsic motivation. That's like giving gold stars. And I mean, there are some educators who think gold stars are not a good idea. They really think that students should be motivated on their own to learn, and what you should do is create an environment where you have intrinsic motivation. But actually, I don't know. I sort of have a hunch that it's probably better with intrinsic motivation, but that sometimes you need some extrinsic motivation. I mean, it's like jobs. In a good company, people take pride in their work, and they are motivated by the work itself. But there are some jobs nobody would do unless you pay them really well, and the payment is extrinsic motivation. And even the people who are intrinsically motivated and take pride in the job still don't mind the money. So it may be a combination of the two. Appeal is clearly important. Stimulate people's own ideas. That goes back to the Porter and Zellenbrook. So the ability for group work, we talked about that. Can the program be used on its own, or does it need instruction? Now, if it needs instruction, it's not necessarily bad. And there may be some subjects that are best taught by a combination of teacher and program support. And so it's okay. There needs to be good documentation for the teacher. For the teacher, I mean, if it's to be used in school, or for the parent, if it's software for a 3-year-old, that must be used in an intelligent fashion to be furthering that 3-year-old's development. And so there needs to be documentation on the educational purpose and the educational strategies to be used to make the program really useful. I didn't organize this very well. This good use of graphics belongs where? Presentations go with the computer. For schools, cost of course is always an issue. The organization issues I'm going to skip. And so I'm going to stop there abruptly. And we'll reconvene at 10:35. End of this lecture.